My employees just got iPhone 12 on Verizon 5G, the 5G business has been waiting for. We download huge files on the go and use multicam video conferencing. Plus, with the coverage of 5G nationwide and more cities, ultra-wideband, it's 5G from the network businesses rely on.
Get iPhone 12 Pro Max, the ultimate iPhone for business. Switch and save up to $1,000 with qualified trade-in. 5G nationwide available in over 1,800 cities with number transfer. Terms apply. Limited time offer.
This is your tech news briefing for Friday, November 27th. I'm Amanda Llewellyn for The Wall Street Journal. We're all trying to figure out how to navigate what's shaping up to be a very unique moment in our history. But The Wall Street Journal is also thinking about what comes next. So all this year, we've been putting on a virtual event series where we talk to experts and industry leaders about the big changes coming to the ways we live, work, and play. It's called The Future of Everything. On today's special episode, we're bringing you a conversation from our recent Future of Transportation event, where our personal tech editor Wilson Rothman sat down with Jay Walder. Walder is the CEO of Virgin Hyperloop One, one of the best-known companies that's working to build a new mode of super-fast transportation with vehicle pods that would be guided through low-pressure tubes using electric propulsion and magnetic levitation. Walder's background is in public transportation, and in their conversation, he and Wilson discuss how that's informed the path forward for Hyperloop. Plus, they catch up about a recent milestone for the company. We'll have their conversation for you after a quick break.
My employees just got iPhone 12 on Verizon 5G, the 5G business has been waiting for. We download huge files on the go and use multicam video conferencing. Plus, with the coverage of 5G nationwide and more cities, ultra-wideband, it's 5G from the network businesses rely on.
Get iPhone 12 Pro Max, the ultimate iPhone for business. Switch and save up to $1,000 with qualified trade-in. 5G nationwide available in over 1,800 cities with number transfer. Terms apply. Limited time offer.
Hyperloop, it began as a sketch by Elon Musk, which I think he borrowed from a 1987 James Bond film. It's a capsule you put someone in and send them hurtling at dramatic speeds through a long distance pipeline. Sounds a little sci-fi, but 7 years later, the leading company developing it, Virgin Hyperloop, has at its helm Jay Walder, a guy who has been in charge of the subway systems of New York, London, and Hong Kong. That's one way to gain credibility. So welcome, Jay. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Wilson. Thanks for having me.
So how did it happen? You got a call from the company's lead investor, Dubai Port World, and they were like, what? You're interested in overseeing some sort of tube rocket?
Well, you know, actually, the line that I often repeat, which came from the headhunter, is he said to me, I have something I want to talk to you about, but it's not for the faint of heart. And he wasn't lying, but it's just incredible. And it was a great, great opportunity. And to be able to move from doing the kind of things that I've done in my career in to now really having the opportunity to fundamentally reshape the way we think about mass transit. Think about that. That's just amazing.
But what was it? Like, what was the one piece that sparked you that you said, okay, this isn't just drawings on a piece of paper?
Well, you know, we went through like weeks of discussion, and finally someone said to me, hey, get on a plane, come out to Las Vegas, our co-founder and CTO Josh Geigel will meet you there, and come out to see the test facility in Las Vegas. And that was the moment. I mean, I shouldn't be giving this away, but I was at that point just totally hooked. And it was so real.
It's very hard to grasp without seeing it. I think you guys teased a video to us that I got the chance to watch, but unfortunately we're not allowed to show on this program today. And it showed it looked like some sort of Emirates Air check-in room, you know, a big gorgeous atrium where passengers were, you know, walking in. They kind of get on this thing that looks like a really fancy Disney ride, and they shoot off. And the speedometer says 600 plus miles an hour. Meanwhile, they're sitting there enjoying their coffee and working on their laptops. You know, getting to there seems like a major journey. But you recently, on November 8th, hit a milestone, right? What was that?
Yeah, so look, let's break it down a little bit, right? The test facility that we had in Las Vegas, we have run over 400 tests at that test facility. It's a 500-meter Hyperloop tube, a full-scale working Hyperloop that the company has built and really demonstrated and proven that Hyperloop works. That had already been accomplished. But the question that we were asked most often, that I was asked most often, is it safe? And we set out on a journey really about 18 months ago to be able to show that it is safe and to put the first people in a Hyperloop pod. That really was, I think, a huge step. So what happened on November 8th? On November 8th, two of our colleagues, right, real people, Josh Geigel, our co-founder, they said, Sara Lucian, who is the director of our passenger experience, they got in a Hyperloop pod together. And we had the first run of people in Hyperloop and really being able to look at this and say, we have now demonstrably answered that question. It is safe.
So can you just take us through, like, this again? It's 2020. Originally, you guys had said 2025 having a certified program, but now you're looking to have production by 2030, something actually in the works.
So let me take a couple steps back on this and then take your question, because I think there's several things embedded in there, right? First off, you see a test with real people showing that we can do it. Our goal in this is to have a customer experience that feels truly special, right? To have something in which you are going into an environment that is quick and convenient for you, that is flexible, more like ride hailing than the way we think about the tyranny of train schedules. As I always like to point out, environmentally friendly, right? We want to be able to think of this as 21st century transportation that's not polluting the air that we breathe. And in certain locations, I think we can literally disconnect from the grid. And that's an amazing statement to be able to make about doing this. The foundation of any modern transportation system has to be shared mobility. There's no question about that. And to go back to what you were saying before, why am I here, right? I'm here to actually connect what is an incredible technical development program, that's part of the point that you're making, with what it takes to be a transportation system, right? And in between that is really proving the safety and the certification, creating the customer experience, and allowing all of those things to happen to be able to do it. Our path forward is to have the certification of this system by 2025. We recently announced that we will move forward to build the Hyperloop Certification Center in West Virginia. Hugely excited about this. Look, I'm a kid from New York. I'm not sure I would have ever guessed that we would be going to West Virginia to do this. So we're gonna build that out. And literally, I've got people there right now working to be doing this simultaneously with what we're doing right now. We should have that certification by 2025. And then when you refer to the end of the decade, by the end of the decade, I want Hyperloop projects that are in use, that we are actually running.
So are you the equipment maker or are you the track builder? And I mean, it seems like those are two different jobs. And obviously you have experience working with both of those entities in your past lives, and therefore probably a good one to make the call. But are you going to build the gear? Are you going to build the tracks? Is someone else going to build the tracks? How's that work?
Yeah, well, look, I would actually describe us actually as the architect of a vision of high speed, high capacity, environmentally friendly mass transportation. And within that, we're creating all of the aspects of doing that, whether it's the software that's doing it, whether it's the system integration that's taking place, whether it's the IP and the basis of being able to create the tube and the pod and everything that's there. Ultimately, I don't believe that our company will undertake directly the production of every aspect of this. And I think one of the things that I like about this is we're not just creating a company, we're actually creating a business ecosystem of new jobs, new technology that can be there and new opportunities that are there in doing it.
Right. So you guys have raised hundreds of millions now, a couple hundred million at least. How much have you raised so far?
We've raised over $400 million right now. Yeah. And yes, this is a capital intensive company. No question about
right.
that.
But that is for that investment. Investors know that is for the development of the system, not necessarily any of the actual transit, you know, correct, infrastructure.
Correct. And I think when we look toward actually bringing out projects, I think you will see them done in a way in which there are probably individual SPVs that are taking out projects. But the backbone of the system has to be the same. It is the technology, the architecture that we're developing. It is the software and control systems that we're developing. It is the standards for the tube and the pod and everything that goes with that that we are developing as well. And that comes together as an integrated system. Maybe the point here is we're both developing the airport, we're managing the airspace, and we're doing the plane, but we don't have to actually build every aspect of that, but we have to bring them together.
That sounds very much like a juggling act. So one of the things that struck me as interesting is, you know, obviously an initial vision and part of that your passenger experience, you know, future project is a LA to San Francisco run in 30 minutes or so. I think that's what Elon Musk promised back in 2013. But the reality in the near term is actually more one to connect, you know, like you said, you're going to West Virginia or like in Missouri that you've had lots of talks with folks out there to connect St. Louis to Kansas City, you know, going through a lot of cornfields and things like that. It's not so much, you know, ripping up, I don't know, the Ojai Valley, whatever my geography is, right? So has that changed? Is it a rural transportation solution at first?
I think the what I'd say about that is our first projects, we want to knock down or reduce the barriers that exist to be able to do it. Look, we're both people who live up in the New York, New Jersey region. If we think about going from New York to Washington, D.C., I think we're going through six states and the District of Columbia, right? And yeah, that ain't easy, right? Beyond the technology development that's taking place. What we want to do right now is to be able to bring this out in a way that everybody can see and understand and the technology we're doing, build real projects, not create more barriers that exist to be able to do it. We have the opportunity to carry cargo as well as people, logistics and mobility, and that can be part of being able to do this as well. I think it's one of the great advantages of this system in being able to do it. But I do love the idea that this is potentially a system that helps us to connect the heartland of America, right? If you think about the way that we set ourselves out, the way our country is now comes together, it's defined by the interstate highway system, a technology effectively that was built in 1956 when Dwight D. Eisenhower was president of the United States. We can reimagine the relationship between distance and time with the way that we're doing it. And I'll give you an example of this. A year or so ago, I was in Columbus, Ohio, and I kept asking people, how far away is Pittsburgh? And everybody gave me the same answer. They said, it's 3 hours. And I looked at them, I said, hey, that's wrong. And you know, people's reaction to me was, hey, you're a guy from New York. What do you know about how far it is from Columbus to Pittsburgh? And my answer to them is, look, it's 185 miles from Columbus to Pittsburgh. That never changes. That's the distance from Columbus to Pittsburgh. But the time it's going to take to get there with Hyperloop is 24 minutes. Sure. And now you're reimagining the connectivity of places. You're reimagining the way in which we have access to the things that we care about, seeing other people, certainly education, medical care, cultural, sports. Think how amazing that actually is to be able to do it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I'm looking at some of the audience questions. I'm actually there. A lot of them are on the same page as me. And I think we're going to just start bringing them in here. So I'm going to ask a question from Nancy Abeles, who is, she says she serves at a Metropolitan Transportation Planning Board. And her question is, what's the rationalization for a pass-through luxury mode when so many metropolitan public transportation systems are collapsing now? I had the same question when I saw the video that you guys had. It looks very much like an exclusive mode of transit for founders and other people who were smart enough to invest in Facebook, like, you know, in 2006. So my question is, how does that become, and Nancy's too, I think, how does that become a mass transit solution that can either augment or economically replace the problematic infrastructure we have now?
So look, let's be clear about this. This is a mass transportation solution. It is meant for people to be able to ride. It is not meant as a luxury trip to be able to do that. But let's step back for a second. There is no question that we need to rebuild and get our mass transit systems around the country on their feet. I would be the first person to say this in doing it. My point is we can't stop there. That's the table stakes of what we need to do. We're in a moment in time in which we need to not just rebuild, but we need to evolve. We need to find the ways that meet what we want to be doing for the future, what gives us the productivity, what gives us the efficiency, what meets our values, for example, in terms of our environmental footprint and what we're doing to be able to do that, that encourages people to change the way that they're moving and that makes shared mobility the key factor in the way that we're moving between places. This is the moment in time to be able to do that. And I don't think if we're treating this as either or, we're making a mistake. We're the United States of America. We should be able to do both parts.
Sure. I got a question from James. He said another great one. In terms of security, both physical and the cybersecurity of these things, how do you protect a complicated computer system meant to keep people safe, but also how do you protect like hundreds of miles of tube?
Actually, one of the great advantages that we have in this system is that it's a closed system, so that it allows us a lot more control of cybersecurity than if, for example, you're thinking about an open system that is trying to integrate different elements together. We are one controlled environment to be able to do it. Look, the question of security, obviously, we have to have security procedures and practices to be able to do that. There's no question about that. They'll be there. That's not the issue for us. We'll be there on that.
A question from George Howell. He says, we speak of the interstate highway system. Can you use the rights of way that the interstate system still has to build this? And what kind of conversation do you have around that? I paraphrase this question.
Well, his question is spot on. I mean, you mentioned before some work that was done looking at linking together Kansas City and St. Louis, the two large cities in Missouri. And the I-70 goes right between those two cities. Black & Veatch, an engineering firm in Kansas, actually did work and did analysis of this and concluded that about 75% of that route could be literally in the right of way of the I-70. I love that part of it, right? What is that telling us? It's saying, hey, we have an ability to leverage an investment that we've already made, and we can lift it up to be 21st century technology to be able to do that. I think there's a tremendous opportunity to be able to do that.
Sure. Jay, a pleasure. Thank you so much. I mean, there's so many, we're going to have to check back with you every year or so, because there's so much you're working on. But in the meantime, we really appreciate you taking the time to come talk to us today.
We've got more events coming up in our Future of Everything series, plus our annual Future of Everything Festival is in May. You can head over to futureof.wsj.com to register. All right, that's it for Tech News Briefing this week. Chris Zinsley is our supervising producer. Kateri Yoakum is the executive producer of Wall Street Journal Podcasts. And I'm your host, Amanda Llewellyn. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.